United States of America versus Pena. Ms. Fuentes, we'll hear from you.
Good morning. And may it please the court, Mr. Pena appeals the district court's denial of safety valve relief in his case. The statutory and guideline provisions governing safety valve require the district court to determine the eligibility of a criminal defendant for that relief, including the requirement that is at issue here, and that is whether Mr. Pena truthfully and completely provided all the information he had about his offense to the government. In this case, the government's theory was that Mr. Pena did not provide all of the information, based purely on conjecture and speculation. By accepting the government's conjecture, the district court abdicated its legal responsibility to make an independent determination of the eligibility for safety valve relief.
Well, what struck me, and of course we've got the excerpts in the record, excerpts of what took place before Judge Husbeth, but what more was he required to do? Both sides presented their views, didn't they?
They did, Your Honor, but it is very clear.
Is he supposed to cross-examine people?
Well, he's supposed to ask questions if he has them, and he did. And it
was based... whose burden of proof is it, ma'am, to prove?
Well, it's the defendant's burden.
And what evidence did the defendant put on?
He put on evidence that...
What evidence?
He put on evidence...
I didn't see any evidence, ma'am.
Well, I'm trying to tell you what it is, Your Honor. Excuse
okay,
me.
Because I saw counsel...
I'm sorry if I'm not saying it correctly.
I saw counsel argument. Did anybody testify or were any exhibits proffered and admitted into evidence?
Defense counsel summarized what was in a report by one of the defense's investigators, and he offered that to the court. I believe that's at the bottom of page 8 and 9. When they started to get into a dispute about what occurred at the debrief, the bottom of page 8, the defense counsel says, my information, I have a report from my case agent who attended the debrief. I would like, if I may, to introduce that into the record. And later, down that same page, about the middle, line 14, page 9, defense counsel says, he was then supposed to take the trailer. He was going to be paid, take the trailer. I think it says Sonora in there, if I'm not mistaken. And he's referring to the report, in there. That's the report he's given to the court. These sentencing hearings often don't even have reports put in. Often they go by proffer. So a defendant under
okay, ma'am,
this
I'm sorry. I don't see where this was admitted by the court.
Again, I don't see the court saying, I accept your proffered report. But the report was offered to the court, and defense counsel referred to it. The court doesn't say, I don't want this. It's not in evidence. That's how these sentencing hearings are conducted. The strict rules of evidence do not apply.
Is it part of the record? I mean, you say there is no indication that the court received it. Or did the clerk receive it?
I can't answer that question, Your Honor. What usually happens in these cases...
But don't you know whether it's in the record or not?
Well, I assume it is in the record.
I
can say that, yes. I assume it is in the record. I have not looked in the court's file to see if it's part of the record. I believe that it is. And in Miller, this court made clear that all a defendant has to do is to, in a submission, credibly demonstrate that he has provided the government with all the information he can be expected to provide. That's the Miller case.
What about delivery? What about, as I understand it, he did not tell the address to which the contraband was to be delivered?
Well, that was a point of some contention at the sentencing hearing. He said he was going to deliver it to Sonora. In their brief, the government says, well, he didn't say exactly when he was going to deliver it.
Is there any indication that the government asked him that and he did not provide the information?
No, there's no indication that he did. When the government says he refused to provide it, that is argument. My understanding is that's what we're permitted to do in briefs. But what the record shows he didn't give a precise...
So if we accept your argument that's not substantiated by the record, then we have to accept his argument that's not substantiated by the record, and that is that your client refused to provide the address.
Well, you have to look at the record itself. The record that I'm referring to begins on page 5 of the sentencing hearing, when defense counsel goes through the points that were discussed at the debriefing. When the government starts to dispute it, he provides the report to the court.
Okay, here's the problem I have, ma'am. First of all, this report was never admitted in evidence. It appears to me to be rank hearsay. You've got a report from some agent who's not there to be cross-examined that you're purporting to proffer for the truth of the matter. So I don't think it would have been properly admitted, but in any event, it wasn't admitted. You're here in the Court of Appeals assigning a point of error to the trial court to have not considered something that was neither admitted nor admissible. And in the absence of this report, which we don't seem to have, or you don't know for sure if it's in the record, but in any event was not admitted into evidence, you have no evidence, and it's your burden of proof. So can you explain to me why we should find error when you have not met your burden of proof?
With respect, Your Honor, I would disagree. This is not a hearing where the rules of evidence apply, and there is no strict requirement. In fact, hearsay is often accepted, and hearsay is accepted.
But it wasn't here. I mean, again, whether it should have or shouldn't have been admitted, I don't see here where the court says, I admit it, and here it is in the record, or I don't admit it, and then a point of error can be assigned to that, and we can debate the degree to which rules of evidence might or might not apply here.
The defense attorney summarized what was in that report on page 5. The prosecutor started to dispute it. The defense attorney came back and said the prosecutor was not present. Here's what my report says. Whether that report was, I think it was given to the court, I think it's in the record. Whether it was or not, it is permissible for the court to accept it. And pages 10 and 11 of the transcript show that the district court did consider it. If you look at page 10 and 11, I think it's particularly telling, and I put most of the transcript into the record excerpts, and I think that you can see the district court does not agree with the prosecutor. The court says to the prosecutor, what exactly is the hang-up here, counsel? And I'm reading from page 10 of the transcript.
Mm-hmm.
And the prosecutor says, well, also there is someone, where are you delivering this to? And the court says, pardon me? Where are you going to deliver this to? And the court says, he didn't say he was supposed to go to Sonora. Okay, the court is satisfied that Mr. Pena has demonstrated that he told the agents where he was going to go. So the prosecutor switches gears.
That's a question. He said he didn't say it was supposed to go to Sonora, at least in the transcript.
Correct, because okay. The report says Sonora. We have that the defense counsel has said it. And the prosecutor is saying he didn't tell us where he was going to go. The court is answering, didn't he tell you he was going to Sonora? It is a question.
Well, he knew where he was going besides just to some town.
Well, maybe he did and maybe he didn't.
You mean he's just going to some town with a load of contraband and just going to park in the middle of the street and what?
What likely occurred, and this, I will tell you, is not part of the record, but this is what the judge knows, this is what everyone knows. What happens in these drug deals is that someone will have a cell phone, and when they approach the place that they're supposed to leave it, someone will call, because the people who are running these operations do not want to be found or tracked down. So let me go back to page 10, because again, I consider this extremely important.
Go back to page 10, was there any attempt or any suggestion to call the defendant to testify as to the information he had provided?
No, Your Honor. And again,
why not?
Well,
if he wants the safety valve and it's his burden, why didn't he take the stand and testify?
Well, the way that defendants satisfy that is to provide a submission. He could have taken, I guess what I think is, did he provide sufficient information? And I think he did in this case. And again, I think the district court accepted that, and that's clear from the district court's comments. Going back to page 10, when he says, okay to Sonora, the prosecutor realizes he's not getting anywhere. So he comes back and he says, well, to who? The question that Judge Jolly was talking about. You don't just deliver it in the middle of Main Street, Sonora. I mean, there's information here he knows. But listen what the judge says. I'm not expressing any opinion, and now we go on to page 11, about the facts of this case. All right, it was the judge's job to express an opinion about the facts of this case. The judge says, I've sentenced thousands of defendants, literally, who did not know who was going to pick up the load. They were assigned the task of delivering it to a parking lot, at a McDonald's, in a certain city, or at a Walmart. So we see this every day. The court is making clear its belief. It is questioning the prosecutor, almost pulling the prosecutor on, saying, what's the problem? He said Sonora. And I see every day that this is the kind of story we have in drug – this is what happens in drug cases.
So the district court, as reflected on the – at the hearing, is very actively engaged in this and asking questions. It's not like he was dozing when the government just made a pro forma presentation. And then he goes on and the government says, we've got more information than that, Your Honor. They talk about that some more.
Very important
point.
Tell
me again why the defendant was in the courtroom, right?
Yes.
Why didn't they call the defendant to testify?
As a practical matter, there are a lot of safety concerns.
Don't talk about practical matter. Why didn't he call the defendant to testify if he really believed he should get the safety valve?
For safety.
For safety?
Yes. They're up at the bench because people who are in jail don't like snitches. So somebody who gets up on the stand.
Is there any evidence of that in the record, Your Honor? We had called the defendant.
Your Honor,
there are snitches in the courtroom and he's afraid to testify? No.
No, Your Honor. What happened was counsel asked to approach the bench because of the delicate nature of this sort of an argument. So I think that's evidence on the record. But I think it's very important to go back to what you pointed out.
He doesn't say why he asked to approach the bench. He said, can we approach the bench?
Again, Your Honor, as a practical matter, it
is
unrealistic.
Well, don't talk about practical matters. You don't even know what's in the file in this case.
I think practical matters are important in court, and I apologize that I've not looked in the file to find it, but the evidence was before the court. It was
But it wasn't. I mean, that's the – I'm sorry. I know that you think it's irrelevant whether there's evidence before a court and whether a court should draw opinions from evidence or just from lawyers talking, but I actually think it matters when you are going to assign error to a district court and the ducks are not in a row. So that's the concern we have, and I understand practicalities. People can get lost in the niceties of rules. But when you come to an appellate court and ask us to reverse a district court, it matters whether there was evidence, and I'm just not seeing it.
And my argument is that the court, by its comments, shows that it considered the proffer by the defense attorney and the references made by the defense attorney as well as the prosecutor as evidence. And evidence is what the court accepts. It doesn't have to be a piece of paper that you put in, and it doesn't have to be testimony.
See, I don't see that the court did accept it for the very reason you pointed out. I'm not expressing an opinion. That's the sort of thing that a trial judge says when they haven't heard evidence and they don't want to appear to be prejudging what the evidence might be, and they're just listening to an opening statement. And we'll say, you know, it seems to me if this is all true, then you got a problem, that kind of thing, because they don't want to pass on evidence not yet proffered. And it was never proffered here, or at least admitted. And accept it. So I think actually the point that you rest on is contrary to your argument.
Again, Your Honor, with respect, I would disagree. And I do want to address it some more, and I will try, but I want to get back to a point that Judge Barksdale raised, which I think is very important. You said the court then went on to other information. That is really the biggest problem in this case. Page 11. Well, says the prosecutor, because there's a little bit more details about his history, the information the agents knew, the information believed. The court, his history, he's done this before. The prosecutor, his family has. That's not sufficient. That is what makes the district court's decision erroneous. If you want to call it decision, if you want to say that he made his own decision on it, it was erroneous to the extent that he accepted the proffers of the prosecutor, then it was error because it was pure conjecture. And both Miller and the Miranda-Santiago case, which are cited in our opening briefs, show that the courts have rejected this sort of speculation in a case to deny safety valve. In Miller, for example, the government said, the defendant said he had just learned how to dry cocaine. He was arrested in 1997. The government pointed to a 1995 arrest and said, well, he's been in the cocaine business a long time. It can't be true that he has just learned to dry cocaine. And the Fifth Circuit, this court in Miller, said that is conjecture. That is speculation. The case it relied on, United States versus Miranda, said the same thing in a situation that was very, very comparable to this one. And I want to point out one more thing on the record that I think is incredibly important and goes to this issue of whether the district court erred by denying safety valve based on the conjecture of the government. And that is the pre-sentence report itself shows that Mr. Pena has been gainfully and lawfully employed for all of his life. He's a 43-year-old man. He's been married for 24 years. He does not have any prior convictions. The pre-sentence, the probation officer observed that the furnishings in his home were commensurate with the family income. The government says, the government admits he sat down and debriefed, but the government says we don't believe him because of his family history. That family history, saying that, is mere conjecture. And I don't even know that it's any more than his brother, especially when you look at the facts, those in the pre-sentence report and those of the rest here.
Okay, Ms. Fuentes, you've saved some time for rebuttal.
Yes.
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Mr. Gay?
Good morning. May it please the court. I'd like to begin by saying, if you look at the transcript, a review of the record clearly shows that there was no misconception about the law. On page 12 of the sentencing transcript, defense counsel is saying, the safety valve is different. It just requires that the defendant make a truthful statement about his involvement in the instant offense, regardless of whether that information is sufficient to assist the government in prosecuting others. The court, well, let's assume that is the proper application of the concept. Mr. Siebert, is it the government's position that he has truthfully informed you as to all the details of this particular offense? Mr. Siebert, no, Your Honor. There is no misconception on the part of the district court or the parties as to what the legal standard
was
is.
Was this report, in fact, that your opponent has been relying on, admitted in evidence or considered by the court or in some way part of the record?
In this case, there was simply argument by counsel, as far as I can tell. I have never seen it as an exhibit as part of the record that I received on appeal. Whether it was included with the pre-sentence report that was forwarded to this court, which would be here at the here with the court, I am unaware that it is there.
He originally called him a case agent, and then the judge said, calling him a case agent, it's probably one of your investigators, and the defense counsel replies, it is, right, and then he summarizes.
Is the court required to accept hearsay, even if they doesn't have to exclude it? Is he required to accept it? In other words, had he admitted this report, is he required to give it any credibility?
This is primarily, as this court's recognized, this is a question about burden. The defendant is the one who has the burden to come forward with evidence which would suggest that he has truthfully debriefed. In this case, hearsay is routinely considered by district courts.
No, I understand that in the sentencing, but what I meant before was it was rank hearsay in the sense of this is just some other person at a court, not involved, not anywhere before the court. Is the court required to credit that?
I don't think it's required to. I think
okay.
The court certainly could.
Okay.
I don't think it's required to. At the end of the day, the attempt to say that the district court did not make a finding, it's interesting that on the record, the district court was never asked to make the credibility finding. And in fact, it really an implicit finding was made. When you look at the entire transcript, the district court is fully aware of what the contention of the parties is. And admittedly, there is some ambiguity because they talk at various times about things that have occurred, whether it was the family, not the family. It's clear that the government believes that he has not been truthful as to all of the details regarding this offense. And part of that is linked to the knowledge that they have that he has family ties and that he's in the business and that this is a substantial load. It's not some minor load. It's a large quantity. He hasn't completely disclosed the details of where it was going, although the judge correctly pointed out that sometimes they don't know. But in this case, the government simply offered its view that he had not been truthful in providing the details, and that was the government's opinion.
So again, if we go back to Judge Jolly's question, if we credit the non-evidence from the defendant and we credit the non-evidence from the prosecution, then the judge could make the call that the judge made.
It goes back to the question of burden, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, the tie goes to the person that doesn't have the burden of proof.
And I think it's important to also point out that the government and the court, the government offered and said, we're happy to come back and do a Rule 35. In fact, at the closing comments, the judge reminds the defendant that if he does come back and give a statement of the cooperation, that the Rule 35 is on the table. And it's not as if there was any attempt to simply arbitrarily say no. I think the record is very clear. And it also goes, I'd like to even step back and say that the pre-sentence report itself even answers the question right up front that says that the government has responded that he's failed to provide truthful information about this offense or other offenses. It does say, or other offenses that are part of the same common scheme or plan. At no point is there any, and although the government does say that we think he was truthful, I'm pretty clear from reading the record that what the government is saying, he's truthful as to the amount that he gave us. We're not saying that what he gave us wasn't truthful. We're just saying that it wasn't complete. And so on this record, I think that it's very unfair to characterize the district court as having failed to meet its obligations, number one, when it was never asked to make a credibility finding, and number two, when it's clear from the record that the district court understood the parties, everyone in the courtroom understood what the requirements are, and then the question was put to the prosecutor, and the prosecutor answered that question.
Okay.
If there are no further questions, I'll yield back my time.
Thank you, Mr. Gay.
Thank you.
Mr. Yankus, you've saved some time for rebuttal.
Sorry. You can pick it up. We won't count it against your time.
Okay. I just wanted to make a point again, and I don't mean to aggravate the court by mentioning practicality, but I think it's very important. It's interesting in this case that we don't have an argument by the prosecutor.
Well, I mean, if that's what you've got to fall back on, that's what you've got.
I guess, Your Honor, it's just the way the hearings work. I don't have the prosecutor arguing, he hasn't put the defendant on, he hasn't done this, he hasn't done that. You haven't met your burden, I don't have to say anything, because everyone understands that the defendant appeared at the debrief, that the agents didn't like what he said at the debrief, and the reasons the agents didn't like it were conjecture and guessing and speculation. So I think it is incorrect, and again, I just want to make that point. No one is arguing this below. No one is disputing that he, no one is disputing it.
I presided over a trial court for 8 years, and I know things can look different on appeal than they felt at the time. I completely understand that, but the problem you have here is this is an appeal. We have to go by the record. We can't just reverse a district judge because we kind of feel like how things went. We have to look at the record, and that's the problem when evidence isn't admitted, when proper evidence isn't given to the court to consider. Or here, when, again, you've got argument of counsel, we don't believe him, we don't think he gave us everything. Well, he did give him everything, yes, no, yes, no, and the judge goes, from this record, I conclude you don't get the safety valve. How can we reverse on that? Again, I mean, I understand where you're coming from. I really do.
Fine. I will move away from all of those other things. Let us just look at the record. From this record, it is clear that the district court rejected safety valve eligibility because of the government's belief that Mr. Pena, because of his family relationships, had more information than he was giving up. That's what this record shows, and that is improper. Under Miller and under Miranda Sabino.
I mean, it's not just speculative, though, is it? In other words, I mean, there's a basis for the government to believe that, in the sense that, I mean, there was evidence that his family was involved in drugs. There's evidence that this man is involved in drugs, and that you understand that family members are, you know, work together, I mean, and kind of know what each other is doing, and he doesn't say anything whatsoever about the family members, and this may even be part of the family member scheme. I mean, but there's a basis for that. It's not just
speculation. And again, Your Honor, I would have to disagree with that. Family relationships have never been approved by this court as the basis for making that kind of an inference. It's called guilt by association, and it's disapproved really at all levels.
Well,
Go
ahead, and then I'll ask you.
I was just going to say, in addition, we only have one family member that I can see, and it was an offense that occurred many years ago. He absconded and has not been seen since. Yes, Your Honor.
Well, isn't the defendant, in order to be eligible for the safety valve, required to provide all information and evidence the defendant has?
Correct.
And who's to make that call on whether he has provided all information and evidence that he has?
The district court.
And how does he do that when you don't put him on the stand?
He just
listens to counsel.
Sometimes he does. That's correct. And sometimes there is a document introduced. A document may have been introduced here. But when
none of this may have been. You should know what's in the record.
That's correct, Your Honor. I should. I apologize
that
I don't.
And to say that the court would allow some investigator to submit some paper he prepared when he attended the debriefing, why wasn't the federal public defender at the debriefing?
I think an assistant defender was at the debriefing.
Well, he says, I've got it from my case agent.
Well,
he didn't
this
say
one
I
was
there.
Not.
He said, I've got it from my case agent. And the judge said, I think you mean investigator. Well, yes.
He was pitch hitting for the attorney.
Excuse me?
The attorney present at the hearing was taking the place of the attorney who was at the debrief.
He didn't tell the judge that.
Oh, he did, Your Honor. Yes, I think
at the very start of the hearing?
Yes, page 2 or page 3. The attorney assigned to the case who filed the pre-sentence report objections and all of those things, she was at the doctor that day. And so he took over and the court permitted it. I want to say...
You send in a substitute lawyer. You're relying on a report prepared by an investigator that you didn't even put in the record. And then you're content to argue to the judge at the bench. And all of a sudden, it's the judge's fault that the government didn't prove or disprove the burden that the defendant had in the first place. That's a pretty flimsy limb to be out on.
Well, the court accepted it. There wasn't any protest from anyone about the evidence. The
you
court
pay
took
your money
it and made
and
a
you
decision.
Take your chances. That was your election, the Federal Public Defender Office election, to do the way they did it in this instance.
Well, maybe that'll be a good record for ineffective assistance of counsel. If it's that strong, then I guess that's a bad decision. But all I have to say is this is how things are done at the sentencing.
Okay. Ms. Fuentes, you stood up well under weathering questions. So.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Okay, we call the next case of the day.